Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, an Easter, well, maybe not special, but it's an Easter weekend of Watford. Two games to look back on. Always nice to have a plethora of games to look back on rather than picking one apart and then picking another one apart. We've got the 2-2 draw at home to Leeds United on Good Friday, and then a 2-2 draw away at the Hawthorns and the Baggies on Easter Monday. My name's John, and to have a chat through these games and how a certain new formation has changed the Hornets recently is Mr. Kieran.
Hello, John. I think you say you debated whether it's an Easter special, but we've seen four goals scored in the last two games. That's true. Definitely special in my mind.
And the Brigadier, Colin Mace.
Well, happy Easter, everybody. I hope you're all having a lovely time. We've had four seasons of weather in one day. So that's classic British spring weather. And we've seen a couple of quite lively performances. It's been quite an enjoyable weekend on the football front.
Yeah, I mean, and I suppose that's the weird thing. You know, let's get into it all. That I suppose I wasn't quite sure what to expect. You know, since Tom took over and since we got that win away at Birmingham, it was that whole thing of going, we've done enough. We're going to stay up. There's no need to worry, even though Mike will try his best to put us all down on the WhatsApp group. But, you know, there's no need to worry about things. And I didn't want to think, I didn't think for the performance I've seen, they're playing with the handbrake off, because that's a more fluid flowing when you're in, you know, you're a good team. But there was a bit more freedom I think, especially in that first half against Leeds United. And sat at the end of a table of a Easter family gathering on my phone watching it. It was a joyous thing to watch. And I did yelp a couple of times, which made everyone jump in the room. But Colin, you know, you haven't been on for a while. Coming into this weekend and coming into particularly that Leeds game, where was your head at, do you think, in terms of your expectations?
As you say, I've not been on the podcast for a while and I've not been to that many games for all sorts of work and family reasons. When he was announced as a coach, maybe you've already gone over this, but just put my two penneth in. I thought it was a really good appointment because, firstly, I think that certainly in my mind, he's something of a Watford legend. I know that word is overused sometimes, but he came on loan when he was young and then he went away and had his illustrious career, came back permanently, helped us in the Premier League. And I just think he's somebody that Watford fans generally really like. He's quite quiet. He's not a particularly big character. But I also think that walking into that dressing room as a young coach in his first job, he will have got the respect of the players because they know he's been there, done it, bought the T-shirt at the top level playing for England. I don't know, something like 20 times. So I think that was exciting from my point of view. He's a, you know, as I say, he's a kind of Watford man. And so that should bring some optimism. And then his initial job, I think, was to deal with, and I am going to answer your question, just taking a slightly roundabout way. Sorry about that. Happy Easter, everybody.
Just go for it, Megan.
But he had to address two things. One, we can see too many goals. And two, in the late period of Valor and Ishmael, we weren't scoring and we didn't really look like we were going to score. We didn't really know how we were going to score. He would play Bayo up there on his own and that was kind of, and then he'd swap him for Rajovic and that was like, so we'd stop scoring. And in the autumn, we were banging goals, you know, we at Preston and two late goals at Blackburn. So suddenly that all dried up. And of course, that meant we started losing games. So he had to address these problems and it's clear how he's decided to go about it. He's gone to a 3-5-2 because he feels that Bayo and Rajovic on their own clearly are not really able to either hold the ball up or create goals for themselves or you know, all those things that we've talked about in the past. So he's pushed Dennis up into that position, gone to three at the back and pushed the fullbacks up into a midfield five, if you like, but it can also drop into a kind of defensive five. So you would think, okay, well, that's clever thinking because that should make us more resilient at the back. And it should help us to create more chances. And I think those two things have, in fact, happened. A bit of a scrappy win, 1-0. But and obviously, we conceded late goals in the last two games. But, you know, we are playing against certainly one of the best teams in the league. And then one who is fighting very much for fifth or sixth position. So I would say, after watching the two games Friday and today, that a month ago, we would have lost both those games. And this time, we got our noses in front, weren't quite able to hold on, but we got good points. And so I think there's certainly some, he's got the same players, no new players, there's no window or anything. So he's had to kind of adapt and use players in different positions. I really like the fact that he's brought Bashiru into central midfield and Kayembe alongside him. I think that's been quite dynamic. So there's change of system, not many people like a back three, do they? Most football fans don't really like a back three. But
Kieran, are you a back three fan, or indifferent about it?
I think it largely depends on the personnel that you've got available as to whether I like the formation or not. And I think, you know, I think what we've seen in the two games that Thomas has had over the Easter weekend is the formation has really benefited Ryan Andrews and Jamal Lewis. I don't think they're the best defenders, but I think what they both are is they're pretty decent going forward, especially Ryan Andrews. And we saw with the goal that Milita Rajovic scored, that came off of a Jamal Lewis assist. I think we got, I don't know how many corners in that Leeds United game on Friday. I've lost count by the end, but a lot of them came down Jamal Lewis's side. I do actually think it suits us quite well. You know, we were conceding, as Colin said, we were conceding too many and not scoring enough. And actually what we've seen is, yes, we are still conceding, but we've started to score now. And actually not just scoring, but we've looked like a threat. You know, we had chances against Leeds. We've obviously had chances against West Brom. Unfortunately, get a chance to see the game today, but saw the stats. And, you know, we've outshot them away from home. And this is a team that's pushing for promotion. They're in the playoff places, well above us. I think actually the 3-5-2 suits us. It makes us a little bit more stable. And I think, you know, we were discussing it before we came onto the podcast, John, that we've seen Tom Cleverley not play Jake Livermore in the three games that he's been in charge. I think having that extra defender means we don't necessarily have to. And I'm in agreement with Colin. I think it means we can be a bit more dynamic in midfield with Kiembe and Deli Bashu. We don't necessarily need that holding midfielder in Livermore because you've got that extra centre-back to protect the defence. So I think it's worked well for us in the two games that we've seen over the weekend.
Colin, you know, you've talked about that midfield. I think the bit I really want to talk about is the back three, but we'll get to that in a little bit. No, the frontness of it all, the attack, let's say. But let's just sort of say, I think you're right, Kieran. I love the fact that the frailties, let's say, of Andrews and Jamal Lewis are sort of helped, and they can do the best thing they can do. Do you think, though, you know, in terms of other players that benefited from this 3-5-2, Colin, yeah, do you think in that midfield, what is it that helps those midfield three? Well, it was four, I suppose, who played. It was Kiembe and Tom Deli Bashu have played the most. They played both games. Asprilla played it once, and Kone also played but they swapped for the Monday game. Colin, what do you think it really, why does it help them? Or why does it help them be better than they were before?
It's interesting, isn't it? Midfielders like to... a good midfielder will hold possession and use possession and look for ways to get the ball into more dangerous areas. And if you've got a back four, you're kind of on your own, the two of you, or the, you know, if you've got Livermore, Kiembe and Kone, as we used to have, they're a little bit on their own in terms of who they're going to pass to. So where are the options if someone like today, Bashiru, receives the ball in midfield from a centre-back? What are his options? And the 3-5-2 system helps him because the two fullbacks have come up alongside them pretty much the whole time. So you can start to make those little triangles in midfield until you get the opening to pass it further forward. And I think that started to happen a lot with both Lewis and Andrews. They come forward onto the halfway line. Bashiru gets it in midfield, or Kiembe. They can pass it to each other, but they've also got two other players they can pass it to who can then pass it back to them. And you can slowly make little overloads in wide areas in the middle of the park. And then you give yourself the opportunity for one of those players to get into a forward position and get the ball to them out wide. And then the midfield can move up and receive it again from them. And that way you can actually start to dominate the play in that area. And we saw that today in the first 25 minutes of the second half. We were really camped in their half, putting pressure. The ball was being recycled. It was coming out, coming back in. They were defending deeper and deeper because they were under threat. Why were they under threat? Well, because as I've just explained, you get the ball into your fullbacks, if you want, or wing backs, and then you can receive it and you can slowly start to incrementally move up the pitch and get into dangerous areas, and defenders have to start retreating. It's dangerous for them to press in those areas because they might leave gaps in behind them if they don't actually aren't successful in the press. So it seems that it's a whole, it's not a system I really have ever really been fond of, but certainly with the players that we've got, I think it seems to work quite well. And the player that really stood out for me in that midfield today was Tom Dele-Bashiru. I thought he was excellent at times in his retention of the ball and his use of the ball when he had it. And I think that it helps us because you get an extra two chaps, if you like, in a midfield zone, for want of a better word, with Kone, obviously, as well as Bashir and Kiemba. You've got these two wing-backs, and it gives you more options to keep the ball and progress up the field. So I think that helps us in terms of how we put pressure on teams, how we get our team up the pitch, and how we can then threaten the goal.
It's interesting because I looking at that midfield, like it almost like, because we're near the tail end of the season, you always have that conversation, well, who would be the player of the season? And in a season when no one's really shone, it's always quite a hard thing to do. But I suppose with Kembe in these now two different midfields that we've had, him when he played with Kone, when he played with Livermore, now sort of imparting himself and scoring an absolute belter today against West Brom. It's like, oh, maybe that's given him a little bit extra to being getting a few extra votes, definitely the hipsters' vote, I think, for player of the season. But we'll a couple of weeks we have to worry about that. I suppose the other person, what it does the system and what it felt like at least on Friday against Leeds, it felt like there was just another attacking body. And like you say, Colin, you were talking about them like passing with the other midfielders and having put there. There was someone else to pass to. There was someone else to ask questions and to pull the defence apart, Kieran. Dennis is the player that we know about. We've seen his success. He is the player we worry the most about. And he's been a bit hit and miss. But Friday, he scored an absolutely great goal, a Dennis goal. I think it was Kelly Somers, our mate Kelly, on Twitter. She sort of said he was winding back the years. I mean, I don't think you can wind back 18 months, Kelly, but it's like changing the clocks like we did today. Football
cliches would be all over her, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
What is the limit? Yeah, what is the limit for rolling back? I mean, how long does it have to be? 3 years, maybe?
She said winding back. And if you wind back, and I did actually send this to DCW, Kieran. I said, if you wind back the years, one, he said, oh no, you roll back years. I went, yeah, but if you're winding back, it's only a small amount because you wind back a clock. So it's fine, you wind back a clock.
If you roll back the years, it's got to be a decade, maybe.
Oh, I think 5 to 10. I think you could roll back 5 okay. years, I reckon, but you can wind back the clock. I don't know, not far as back, but it's not a lot. I absolutely get, she, you know, probably done with a lot of tongue-in-cheek from Kelly. It was a goal that it was exactly the way he played that we loved, and he made his base, he scored the goal. There were some other moments which we all know about, we all don't love. But what do you think about him? The fact that we have him as the type of centre-forward he is in this two, rather than it being Bio and Rajovic, do you think that's actually going to get the most out of him and therefore better for us, even though it's not amazing, it's still pretty good?
Yeah, I think, you know, the goal that he scored on Friday, ironically, was largely all down to him, wasn't it? You know, he won the initial header. It was a number nine's goal. He won the header back into midfield and then, you know, turned and received the ball and then ran at their defence. And we know that Emmanuel Dennis, with, you know, facing the goal, with the ability and the skill that he has, is as good as anyone in the Championship. You know, he absolutely terrorised that Leeds defence for the goal. You know, he turned them inside out. Great finish as well. I think, you know, we saw one of his better performances against Leeds and we also, and I'm sure you're going to come on to Bio, so I won't talk about him, but I do think that he benefits from having someone up there with him. I think it gives him a little bit more space because it gives the defenders something else to think about. You know, with having two players wide either side of him, it just means that those two centre-backs or three centre-backs, whatever the formation we're coming up against, they've only got one striker to worry about in Dennis. You know, the full-backs can focus on the wingers, the centre-backs can focus on Emmanuel Dennis. But when there's another player up there with him, it gives them something to think about. And, you know, I won't dwell on him, but I thought Bio had his best game in a Watfordshire against Leeds. He was all over the place. He dropped deep. He was running, you know, played. He got out into the wide areas as well as the central areas. And what that did was it gave the Leeds defenders something to think about and created space for Dennis. So, yeah, I do think it benefits him. I think the problem that we have with Emmanuel Dennis is that he clearly hasn't got 90 minutes in him at the moment. I watched the game against Leeds on Sky, and they had Troy Deeney and Nigel Pearson in the studio. And Troy Deeney was waxing lyrical about Dennis's ability. Obviously, you know, knew him from obviously when he was with the club before he moved on. But he said the one thing is that, you know, the games that he's been involved in, a lot of the time he's gone off, you know, for what look like very small injuries, because he's not been out for any period of time afterwards, has he? He's been involved the very next game. So why is it that he hasn't been able to complete 90 minutes? And Troy was, I wouldn't say he was scathing, but he certainly, you know, certainly was questioning, is he really up for it? You know, is
I think
he
that's
just
a bit of, I think that's a bit of Troyology. I don't think that's true at all. I think that he didn't play any football for so long. Mm. And the Championship, as we know, is incredibly intense. And if you feel something as a number, as an attacking player, and a player that is very important to us at the moment, I would say, if you feel something at 70 minutes, you think, well, if I keep going in 85 minutes, they might be stretching me off and I'll have 6 weeks out with a hamstring. So I suspect that Dennis is probably just looking after himself as much as he's got a terrible reputation, right? We all know that. He went off today as well on the pitch. He went bonkers because one of the West Brom players sort of clipped. I can't remember. Was it Andrews? Sort of ran into. No, I think it was. Can't remember who it was. Bayo or Kone. He sort of ran into him, and then the other player sort of clipped him, and he went down. And Dennis went completely bonkers. It's like, well, he is bonkers. We know that. He's our bonkers player, and every club, you know, it can have one, not more than one. But I do think that the way that he celebrates with the team celebrate with him. I think there's a cautious. We can be cautiously optimistic about how he's been integrated into the group, a bit like Hollabas. Back in the day when Hollabas was so irascible and so difficult. But in the end, the other players sort of found a way to love him because he was a real competitor. And I think Dennis is that. I think he's also probably technically our best forward. I don't think. And when he came back to the club, I was like, well, he's going to play up front because he's good enough. We're struggling with the Bayo Rajovic sort of interchange. But he started playing him out wide on the right. I guess maybe just a try and get his fitness levels up, 5 minutes, then 10 minutes, then 20 minutes, you know, and all that. And now I think that, again, it shows a little bit of intelligent football brain from our boy, Mr. Cleverley, to look at the Rajovic bio problem, which is neither of them are good enough. Together, they are, if you combine them, they would be a good striker, but they're not good enough to lead the line for our club in this league. They're not. And they don't score enough goals. So how do you solve that problem? Like I said earlier, he's got these two problems to solve. You say to Dennis, do you fancy playing through the middle? And he goes, yes, Gaffer. That's what I want to play because I like scoring goals. And as you said, the goal against Leeds was a classic Dennis goal. He's like, he's not passing it. He's not really looking to pass it. He's looking to try and make the defender think he is going to pass it. As you say, turn him inside out, off to the right, onto the left, knocks it away from his left foot, bang. And that is a classic Dennis goal. But today, I saw other sides to him. He was passing. He was coming a little bit deeper, trying to link play, trying to run at people, then trying to turn around. If there's no option, instead of just saying, well, there's no option, but I'm going to keep going, he's like, okay, I'm going to release the ball and then try and get in a better position. So the Bayo Dennis, and I think he's probably better suited to playing alongside Bayo than he is against with Rajovic, because Bayo is so mobile. It seems like this is a good idea. You're putting one of your technically best players alongside a player with a lot of appetite and energy and desire to run in Bayo. And then behind them, you've got three midfielders, including obviously Kone. And then you've got these two wingbacks who can get forward and create overloads. And then you've got Dennis in the pivotal position, which is really where you need him, because he will score goals from central areas if you give him enough chances and give him the ball in dangerous areas, and also have enough other players up there to draw defenders away from him so that he can create a little bit of space for himself. So it seems to me that it doesn't feel like, now I'm looking at it, I think, why didn't Val do this? Why didn't Val look at this and go, we're not scoring and we don't look like scoring. These aimless crosses into the box when Bayo's playing, and then when Rajovic is brought on, no one crosses it into the box. Like, okay, so what's going on? Why is there, like Mike has said it over and over, it doesn't look like we're not going to score. It looks like we haven't got a plan as to how to score. And Tom's come in, he's changed the system, he's got three reasonable centre halves, so he can do it. Four, in fact. He's got these young fullbacks that he can push forward and say, look, don't worry too much about the defender. You know, if we're really under pressure, we need to get back. But you just think about how you can link play, how you can get the ball forward, how you can help the midfield. And now we look like we've got a plan because we've got two players who are looking to get into the box rather than one. And, you know, as you said, Kieran, centre-halves are like, no, I've got one of them, but there's the other one over there. Who's getting him? And then I'll get him. No, you get him. And then, you know, then there's suddenly there's space. And then Kembe comes into the middle, sitting on the D, ball comes out, bang. And that we haven't seen since the autumn.
We've seen for weeks, if not a few months, that it wasn't working. And Tom hasn't got the opportunity to bring in any personnel. You know, we're outside of transfer windows. So we've seen Bayo up front on his own. It hasn't worked. We've seen Rajovic up front on his own. It hasn't worked. We've seen Dennis up front on his own at times as well. Hasn't necessarily worked. So Tom, the only thing Tom can do is change the system. You know, you can change the personnel within the squad, but we've seen that certain things haven't worked. So the change in formation at the moment seems to be paying off. What happens until the end of the season, I'm not too sure, but he's spotted that there's a problem and he's looked to resolve it.
Mr. Rajovic, who has been fairly vilified during his period as a Watford number nine, once again, for a big lad, he was pretty sharp onto that cross and he managed, I thought he wasn't going to score, but he did manage to wrap his foot around it just enough so that it crept in at the far post. So, I mean, he has value to the team. His goals, I mean, he scored, what, 14, 15 goals mm-hmm. or something? So he has some value. And I think that the problem is that when he starts, and particularly when he was starting on his own, there were times where he just looked like he didn't look like a footballer. Like when the ball came to him, he could sort of maybe trap it. But as you said earlier, Kieran, he had two centre-backs to deal with because they only had him to deal with, so they could both deal with him. He wasn't very good at holding the ball up. He wasn't brilliant with his head. His distribution wasn't great. And he wasn't particularly mobile. There were times when he appeared a bit stiff and a bit like... So you think, yeah. And a lot of disgruntled fans, you know, in stadiums around the country, not enjoying him. But he does have his value. And maybe his one true value is to come on for 15 minutes at the end of a game and cause a bit of trouble. But maybe also, if he was to get an extended period in the team alongside Dennis, maybe we would see an improvement because what was the problem with him was that he was up there on his own and then he was having to come deep to get the ball and then got the ball and he didn't know what to do with it. So all he can really do is stick it in the net from 6 yards. That's his job.
Well, it was flogging a dead horse is what it was. And now, like I say, there's options. And out of all that attacking quartet maybe a bit more if you include Martins, is the fact that what would he be like? What would he be like in that new system?
Yeah.
When he's up there with somebody else? Because as we all know, it was not working for any of them when they were one up front. It was almost like, well, let's see, what would it be like with two? And now hopefully we'll get to see that. I know we've not got a game till the weekend, but then we've got, you know, away at Ipswich and in a midweek game. So there's more opportunities. And I suppose with him being a player that he is, again, a big part of this whole where we are at the moment, this run of games we've had over the two games over the Easter weekend, it almost felt like, oh, this, you know, the season isn't done and dusted, as in it's, you know, isn't pointless, it's not dead rubber. Actually, there's some possibilities for players like him who are Watford players who, you know, will need to play to get any money for them. Maybe that's a chance for, yeah, this might be the best thing to us to hopefully judge him differently as we all were. Kieran?
He doesn't hide, John. I think that's another thing. You know, we're talking about a player who, you know, I felt really uncomfortable, who was getting ironic sort of cheers from from his own supporters a few weeks ago. But if I look at the goals that he scored, I think he scored away at Blackburn. That was about 3 yards out. He scored away at Norwich, didn't he? That was about 3 yards out. And then he scored away at West Brom, and that's 3 yards out. So he's getting in the box. He's getting in the areas. We know
it's his office. The box is his office.
The off the box is his office. He is our fox in the box, you know. So,
well,
you know,
elephant in the box.
He's our, and I was trying to think of something else, but I didn't want to be too rude. But he's our elephant in the box. But so if you can get the balls into him, look, we know he's not the most talented. His finishing can be a little bit wayward, but the one thing he doesn't do is he doesn't hide. He's willing to get into those areas. And that's what's got him, like Collins, I think it's 11th or something like that this season. And, you know, we don't have many others. So, you know, I don't necessarily think he's good enough on his own. But I think, like Colin said, if we try him in the two, who knows? It might be that it creates a bit of space and opportunity for him.
Yeah, I mean, the other not problem that they've got, the movement, the other changes, you know, everyone we spoke about so far, from Kembe to Tombele Shiru to you know, Andrews, Jamal Lewis, Dennis, Bajorajvic a little bit, you know, they're definitely benefiting because they're coming across being better players than they were. But I suppose there's Espria, Colin, you know, he started against Leeds. He came on today away at West Brom. DCW will tell you he's the first name on the list. He's first name on the team sheet. He is. I mean, is that protecting? Because it's his first time he's played a full season, and it's the first time he's a full championship season at that. Do you think it just purely came down to rest or to not overdoing it, Colin? Because he does, he just adds something, doesn't he? Massive, not something, a lot.
A lot. I mean, I'm with David. For me, I get my pen out and I chalk the word Espria onto a piece of paper and then I work from there. Yeah. But he is a young lad. There's not much of him. You know, he's probably 8 stone, dripping wet. And he did play on Friday. He didn't play the whole game, did he? Did Kone come on for him? I think he did. He came off, I think, on Friday. And today he switched it. Started Kone.
Kone came on for Dennis, and really felt like that's where the whole energy of our sort of attacking prowess disappeared.
Tom Ince came on for us
after 80 minutes. Okay, played 80 minutes, which is pretty much almost the whole game. Yeah. And then today he thought, well, I'm going to put Kone in there. I want to, and also let's not forget, Tom may have watched a lot of games from the last few months under Val, but he's also getting to know the players himself on a daily basis, and he probably wanted to have a good look at Kone in that position. We've seen him play well there. Today was not his day. He really didn't seem to fit in with the system. Like he didn't look like he quite knew where he was supposed, what he was supposed to be doing or how to do it. And we saw that from him when he first joined the club as well, where there was an uncertainty in his play due to lack of experience. And today was just not his day, and it was the right decision. But and when Espria comes on, I think it just lifts the fans. I mean, it lifts the away fans, certainly today, and singing his name, singing his song. And then he's just so damn tricky. You know, you talk about picking up Dennis and Bio, but you've got Espria in an advanced position. And that, you know, those three players together are a handful in central areas because they're all quite quick. They're all three of them are reasonable on the ball. Bio probably the least good. Espria is left foot, right foot, go either way. His passing, like all championship players at the moment, you know, is not always brilliant, but he can pick a pass. He picked the pass. It was Espria who passed it out to Andrews for the Rajovic goal today. And that was through a field of legs and he just slotted it straight out to the left. I think it was Espria who did that. And, you know, you just think, yeah, he's so exciting, but maybe you're right, John. Maybe he's just quite young. It's his first full season. It's a very aggressive physical league. Maybe he's just he can't play 20 games in a row for 90 minutes. Maybe he'll play more next season if he's still with us.
Yeah, but I think what you said there made me think about that. The whole thing about changing of a system, you know, Kone being a bit lost. You know, they are very inexperienced players, both of them. Yeah. You know, have they even played two full seasons? No, they haven't. So you're right, change of a system for young players like them, unless it's really nailing them, like for Andrews, it has helped a young player like Andrews to help with his faults as well as emphasize his strengths.
Yeah. Taking some pressure off him, yeah.
Yeah, for Kone, it's not the same, but like you say, because he's left foot, right foot, Espria can sort of fit in a little bit here, there, and everywhere. But Kone just, it didn't register with me against Leeds when he came on. It all went very flat. And the two, it was more, I think at that point, it was more like to be 2-2 than it was to be 3-1.
I think Kone's improved throughout the season, though.
Yeah,
I think he's
definitely
had good periods, but I think Espria has trained on at a faster pace and he's learned the game. And also, can I just say, when he, you know, with young players, you often start them out wide because you take them out of the sort of the hot zone, if you like, and you take some of the pressure off and responsibility off them. You play them out wide, try to get the ball, see what you can do. And he's played well for us out there. But having Asprey in a central position, poof, I mean, that's the future for that boy, I think.
He's lovely.
And it's great to watch him work in tight areas, and the way that he's like, his head's on a swivel. He knows where players are. He can drop off little passes. He can find space. I mean, he is an exciting talent, but he is young and he does have poor periods. He'll have a poor 15 minutes where he gives the ball away or he gets bullied off the ball. But overall, yeah, I mean, you're always more excited watching Watford when he's on the pitch than when he's not.
Yeah, and neither of them lose their heads. They don't dip. They don't sort of... They're not emotionally.
Ismail Assad. Ismail Assad. Did you say that? No, they don't do that. Their heads don't go down. No,
they don't.
And they don't get cross either. They don't lose their temper. They just get up and get on with it. A bit like Pedro, you know, similar to him.
I suppose the only area we haven't talked about is like defensive side of things. By the way, Pollock started that move for Dennis's goal on Friday with a sort of drawback forward, get his space and played it forward to Dennis to then do what he did. There's a lot of choice there. It feels like there's a lot of choice there. And I think Sierra Alta's definitely benefiting from that. They're putting the most there, Kieran. But Livermore, not so much, as you've sort of already pointed out. He's probably not benefiting from the 3-5-2.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's overly conservative if you put in Jake Livermore with a back three. I just think it's potentially going a little bit too defensive. I do think Jake Livermore had an important role when we were playing with a back four because he does kind of anchor that midfield and give you a little bit more protection. But I think with I mentioned before we came on the podcast when Ryan Porteous is marauding into the centre of the field with a flying tackle that he sometimes misses, you know, it left Wesley Hoot very exposed. But now if Porteous does do that, you've now got Hoot and Sierra there as protection. So, you know, I do think Sierra has benefited. Obviously, we saw him start the season when Livermore was injured in that kind of holding midfield role, didn't we? And actually, I kind of hope that might have benefited him in some way, because when we're in possession, there's part of me that wonders if Sierra Alta can almost step forward a little bit ahead of Hoot and Porteous and play in that sort of Livermore role when we're in possession. And when we're out of possession, he drops back into that back three and it gives us a little bit more stability. So, yeah, I think, you know, I know we've conceded four goals in those two games, but as we've already pointed out, two very good sides. You know, Leeds, are pushing for promotion, very much, you know, looking to bounce back straight away. I think Somerville was the best player that I've seen at Vicarage Road this season. He was absolutely superb, scored a wonderful goal, even though it was offside, in the game. But I think, you know, I think unfortunately what we probably saw as well, and you're talking about the defence as a whole, John, I think Ryan Andrews had a torrid time against Leeds. I think Somerville gave him a really difficult game, but we are talking about probably the best player in the division, giving Ryan Andrews an education. So look, while we may be a little bit more stable in the sort of central position, obviously with Lewis and Ryan Andrews going forward as part of that sort of 3-5-2 formation, potentially leaves us a little bit more exposed in the wide areas at the back. But overall so far, I think I've liked what I've seen.
Can I talk about the goalkeeper?
Well, he's next on the list there, Colin, so yeah. Go for it.
So a decision has been made. Did Hamer get injured and then Batman came back in? But now Hamer's on the bench, so presumably he's not injured anymore and he's ready to play. I just don't get it, John. I don't get it. I don't like Batman. I think he's a liability.
We know.
He runs around like a nutter. He shouts at everybody, rushes up to the referee. He's not the captain, by the way.
No.
And we saw it at Hull. Was it Hull? I think it was Hull. Where he got booked for running halfway up the pitch to remonstrate with the referee. In fact, he was captain that day.
Yes,
so it was a bit of a harsh booking. But it also proves the point. You should never make your goalkeeper your captain. Because if he wants to talk to the referee, he's got to run up. And then he'll get booked. Because it's like, well, why have you run all this way to shout at me? And then he got booked again for the Vardy penalty. And after that, Hamer came in. And Hamer was absolutely brilliant. In terms of shot stopping, certainly. Distribution, always difficult for goalkeepers. Because especially that generation of goalkeepers, because they didn't train as a 9-year-old to be able to play football with the ball at their feet. And so they both find that difficult. But I just think that Hamer is a calmer, more authoritative person. He doesn't lose his head. So I don't quite know what Tom Cleverley has seen. I'm not going to call him Tom yet. I'm not, not yet, because it feels just feels wrong to me, Mr. Cleverly Thomas. Or Sir or Gaffer, yeah, Thomas. I don't really know what he's seen in the two of them to make him revert to Backman. He did it again today, Backman. He was. You could probably argue he's a little bit at fault for the first goal, although it was a hell of a good strike from a, from an acute angle, but it did go in at the near post. Second one, I don't think you could criticise him. It was a hell of a shot. And if you're going to criticise anyone, it's that he wasn't close down. He was given far too long to tee it up, even though he's a right back. You know, they're good footballers, and he put it right in the postage stamp corner, top corner. But I just, in I think it was in the first half, you know, there was a bit of a melee. He comes running over. The thing, you know, Dennis has lost his temper because of this thing. And then suddenly Backman's there shouting. And it's like, and then Hoot's having to calm them down and push them away and say, get away. You're going to get booked. We don't need you to get booked. Dennis did get booked, but Backman didn't. I just don't get it. I think Backman is sometimes outstanding, and he did really well to save that early one chance they had from the Serralta mistake, and he can do that, and he's not a bad goalkeeper, but I just think, having watched Backman for a season and a half and then watch Hamer for like 12 games, I'm just like, what are you seeing in Daniel Backman that you're not seeing in Ben Hamer? And I, you know, he knows more about football than I do, but I just can't understand it.
There's always a thing with goalkeepers is you don't change it for changing its sake. And if, you know, whoever's got the shirt, they keep the shirt until they don't need, you know, there's a reason not to. And you could easily look at the two of them and say, I mean, the way the crowd were towards, you know, Backman was, you know, there's zero trust, no trust whatsoever when the ball goes near him. That has sort of wavered. That's got you know, not as bad as it was, because I think he hasn't had a howler for a while, a true, true howler. But well, that game with the own goal, that was his, you know, since then he hasn't. I don't know. The other question is he on his way out? And the more airtime he gets, the more likely he is to be beneficial for him and the club. I don't know. But I suppose the only reason if I was Thomas, I would think it was because you're changing so many things.
Yeah.
You don't want to change yet another thing.
I just wonder, you know, you've got a captain who's a centre-back. You've got Pollock and Porteous and Serralta. I mean, do they say, we prefer it? We prefer Backman behind us. We actually trust him under the high ball. Or do they say, well, it's up to you, Gaffer. We don't have, you know, but they're in the senior, well, certainly Hoot's in the senior group. He'd be in the leadership group or whatever phrase they use for, you know, the season pros like Livermore and Hoot. So it's interesting. I just having watched the saves that Hamer has made, like all those Northwestern games that I went to in Preston and Blackburn and what was the other one, Hull, just watching some of the saves were unbelievable. Like, well, that's in. You just thought, that's in. And then suddenly his hands, then he pushes it around and you think, and he gained in confidence the more he played. And then you think, okay, I think he got injured, didn't he? And so he couldn't play. And then Batman's come in, and maybe you're right. Maybe it's just like, okay, you know, we're just going to go with this for now and see what happens. But I, after today's performance, and I don't mean the goals so much, although I do think there was an element of poor positioning for the first goal, and he has got a history of that as well, Backman, particularly when goals are scored from wide areas. Often I worry about his positioning. But then seeing him, this temper, you know, the running around and the getting involved, and I just think, no, that's not for me. I'm going to, Ben, you're up and see. But maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's a mystery to me. I don't understand it. I think Hamer is the better goalkeeper, and I don't know why he's not playing. But other people would disagree.
Again, he apart from that own goal, which was 100% Backman's fault, it's hard to, you know, if you have a game like that, you know, probably you want to keep him playing to get him over that.
Yes,
to prove
of course.
To himself. And he, I think he did in that game. He started that process throughout that game. I think, yeah, it just needed a bit more time, I think, to get over things. But, you know, I don't think he's quite in the same problem that Arteta's got over goalkeepers, Mr. Thomas Cleverly. So, you know, we'll see how he does and how he picks them.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Watford women played at Vicarage Road on Sunday afternoon, on Easter Sunday. Another one of those great afternoons at Vicarage Road. Watford lost, unfortunately, 3-0. At home to Sunderland. Kieran, you're a women's football expert, written a book and all that sort of good stuff. We're bottom of the league, quite considerably, and it hasn't been a great year. The main manager, the man who got them up, has gone off to the first team to work alongside Tom. Is this, I suppose, as looking at Watford Women, is this a surprise from a point of view of where they are in terms of full-time, part-time, or whatever it is, compared to the rest of the division? Is it are you overly surprised or just a little bit disappointed?
Yeah, combination of both. I'm not surprised and I'm disappointed. I think when, and I say this with a massive amount of respect, because Lewis have done an enormous amount of good work over the years, and they've been in the Championship for a few seasons. But the resource that Lewis have compared to a club like Watford, who are a Championship men's team, we should realistically, if we're willing to throw more resource at the club, be higher up the table.
A lot higher up though?
I suppose, look, the way that I look at it is that you look at the division and you think, who is it that we could potentially beat? Who is it that we could be above? And I say this with enormous respect, because I know Maggie Murphy, the CEO at Lewis, and she's been absolutely phenomenal. But I would expect, if Watford were to give it a really good go, then they probably should be finishing above Lewis and they should be finishing above Reading. Reading have been free-falling since they fell out of the WSL last season. They are really suffering as a result of what's going on with the men's club. You know, they lost an enormous amount of players. They're literally hanging on by the skin of their teeth at the moment. And I just feel that if we'd given Damon Lathrop, who, as you mentioned, is currently working as part of Tom Cleverley's coaching staff, if we'd given him a little bit more to work with, I do genuinely think that we potentially could have been higher up the table. I think one of the biggest dents that we've seen, and we spoke about it in a podcast earlier on in the season, was the Arsenal kind of dual contract players that we have. We lost one of those in January, Katie Reid. Katie was doing really well playing in defence for Watford, and Arsenal suffered a couple of injuries. One of their players, Swedish international Amanda Illestad, announced a couple of weeks ago that she's expecting a baby. So they were a little bit light in defence, and they recalled Katie, and Watford didn't have enough time to replace her. And she's been a loss for them. And unfortunately, we've not seen Michelle Agumang, the young striker from Arsenal, enough, because she's a real threat and she's got quality that if we'd had her all season, it could have been a bit different. We probably are where we should be based on the squad that we've got. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for us to get enough points to survive. I think what's disappointing as well is that actually, John, when you look at the stats over the course of some of those games, we've actually played really, really well. We have outplayed some of those teams that we've lost to, but we just ultimately don't have enough to stay in that division. And look, miracles happen. We've seen it before in other divisions and seasons, but it's going to be very, very difficult. And unfortunately, I think it could be that we're heading back to where we came from only last summer.
Is it one go down or two?
Two, this is the other thing that Watford are suffering from. This is the first season that two clubs go down from the Championship. So we obviously saw Watford play in a playoff last year against Nottingham Forest, didn't we, at Milton Keynes, that we went to, which was the champions of the Women's National League North against the champions of the Women's National League South. From this season, the champions of the North and South both get promoted and two clubs go down from the Championship, which makes Watford's job even harder.
Yes, Watford 6 points off the safety of 10th place, bottom at the moment with 12 points. So we'll sort of see how the rest of the season pans out for them. It's looking better for the men, at least better. Not amazing, not fantastic, but we've got a game next weekend at home to Preston. We did a really good job away there. They're doing all right, but it's a Championship. Who knows what could happen next? But we're behind the 3-5-2. Yeah, Cole?
Definitely behind it. Yeah, definitely behind Mr. Cleverley.
Do you think he's done
enough already? I mean,
well, that was our same thing. What is the point? What is the point in this season where you sort of go, give it to Tom? You know, is it a win and two draws is probably not enough yet. Is it enough for him to take it? I don't know. Kieran, what do you reckon?
Oh, I was going to say, does he want it? Does he feel ready? I guess is the question. You know, he's been managing the under-18s, and it was interesting what they said on commentary. And I don't know if they were assuming or whether they'd actually got a quote from him, but they said that that Cleverley probably feels, or he said that he feels more comfortable in this role as the senior manager than he was with the under-18s, because he's only just retired, hasn't he? He's been used to being around senior professionals. He was part of this squad only, what, last season, season before. So actually feels more comfortable being the manager of the men's seniors than he does of the under-18s. For me, the most important thing is that you have a guy in there who can create a culture and an environment where the players can thrive. We thought we had that with Val at the start of the season. That was one of the things that we really focused on, wasn't it? That we had an environment and we had a team that seemed up for it, that seemed that to trust the manager. What happened towards the end of his tenure until he comes out and does some sort of big interview, we won't know. But I think the one thing that we know the players will have is a lot of respect for Tom. They will, I think, work. And I think we've seen it with the last two games over the Easter weekend. I think part of the reason we've conceded injury time goals in both those games is the intensity that we've played. I think the players have just been knackered by the end. You know, the pressing and the running that they've done for him, I think, is an early indicator that they want to work for him. So early days, would I be disappointed if he got the position next season? Absolutely not. I would be more than happy and I'd back him. But I would question also, does he want it?
Colin, he's had three games. He's got six games left. What do you think? When would you be, and what would have to happen for you to be comfortable to say Thomas Cleverley?
I think full time. Okay, I'm going to put my Gino Pozzo head on.
Okay, it's
not a comfortable thing to do, but I don't want to be cynical, but obviously Mike's not here, so I better sorry, Mike. I think there's a financial issue. Tom Cleverley is an economic option for the club. It's not going to cost them a lot of money. He's already in position. He's got some decent people around him. He might want to add people of his own, and if he was to stay, so that's one side, which is a bit cynical to say that they'd only employ him because he's cheap. But obviously, the club is under a lot of financial constraints post Premier League, so that is an issue. And they have to look at that. They can't afford to pay compensation to get someone from somewhere else. So they're always going to just get someone who's out of work. They've got someone who's in work at the club. Obviously, he'll be renegotiating his contract if he is appointed head coach. This is a brilliant opportunity for Tom Cleverley. And I can't imagine a universe in which he would say, oh, no, thanks, Mr. Potts. I actually don't think I'm quite ready yet. Can I go back to the under-18s? That's not going to happen. So no. If he's given the chance, he'll take it. The other thing about whether or not he should stay, and all of this is non-footballing, is who else are you going to get? How many managers have we had? How many managers think that Watford is a good idea for their next job? Probably not as many, although all football managers want to be in employment. So clearly they're not going to say no if they're asked, but it's not necessarily that attractive a proposition. So what we've got currently is we've got a young manager who's not going to cost the club a great deal, who is a Watford man in his two different spells at the club, particularly the second spell, where he was captain for a while, I believe, club captain. All of these things point in one direction, which is book him, because, you know, he's got a relationship with the fans. He gets respect from the players because of his career. You know, he'll be allowed to make mistakes. He's already shown that he's got a decent footballing brain. I mean, it may not only be him, it may be his team that have made this change to this system, which seems to suit us at the moment. So it seems to me that I would say, would you like to be them? If I was Gino Potts, I'd say, you'd come into my office on Monday morning, or Tuesday morning, I want to talk to you. Look, there's an opportunity here for you. Do you want to stay on next season and be head coach? We'll renegotiate your contract. Is there anyone else that you would like to bring into your staff who you respect and think would be, you know, good help to you, good support to you? And he'd say, yes, that sounds great. I'll do that. And I'll go and have a nice summer holiday and then I'll come back for pre-season training. It seems fairly simple and straightforward a question, because I can't see why they would let him go, because they then have the job of finding somebody else. As I've explained, that's not necessarily going to be that easy. They find someone from the Georgian League or from, you know, the Russian League, as we've had in the past. And some of those were very successful. But, you know, it's a gamble. There's less of a gamble here. I think what Kieran said is interesting. What did happen to Val and the squad? Or was it that he got them to that point and then we needed someone else to come in? Because the debt of gratitude we owe to Valor and Ishmael is huge. because he took the club by the scruff of the neck. He got rid of a lot of players last season. Well, he didn't, but a lot of players left, slimmed it down, got them focused, got them playing together, got them winning away from home, which we hadn't done for ages, nearly a year, and then repeatedly winning away from home. And then he ran out of steam. And he's maybe he did that at Barnsley, maybe he did that at West Brom, I don't know. But he certainly ran out of steam. We started losing. We couldn't score. We couldn't defend. And so it was time for a change. And I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And so maybe Cleverley is the next step in that in the kind of the fight back, the renaissance, because we all want to not necessarily be in the Premier League, because obviously that is a bit of a reach for clubs our size at times. But we want to be fighting for the playoffs. We want to be in the top echelon of the Championship. We're an established club in English football. We've had 6 years in the Premier League recently. We want to be back there fighting at that level. And maybe Tom Cleverley is the next piece of the jigsaw. It's a punt. It's a punt in the sense that he's got very little experience. But he's got massive experience in football. So we'll see.
Yeah.
They've got to give him time though, haven't they, Colin? If they do make that decision. Yeah. We cannot have another Rob Edwards situation.
No.
If you're going to get him in, you've got to back him in. And I guess I agree with you. There's no way that he would say, no, I don't want it. I'd rather stick with the under-18s. I totally agree with you. And I apologize if it came across that that's what I was
getting at.
I guess the one reason he might not want it is that he, more than most, has seen close up the number of managers that have come and gone over short periods of time. And for someone who is right at the start of their managerial career, for him to take on a job like Watford, and if it doesn't go well at the start of next season and he's out, you know, out of the door after 10 or 11 games like Rob Edwards was, straight away, you know, he's having to rebuild his reputation or rebuild his...
Is he, though?
No, I
don't
I'm not sure.
I don't think people lose out on reputation by coming to Watford now. They go, oh, okay, brilliant. As long as you can talk it through and explain why and what happened in a, you know, in your next interview, I think what his benefit far beyond what Rob Edwards was, it still feels like Rob Edwards wasn't Gino 100% saying that's my man, that's the one I want. He didn't get on with the way that the club is run. We know Tom Cleverley knows exactly how this club is run.
Yes.
He knows a lot more about the inner workings, and the team he's surrounded by know a lot more about the inner workings of the club. So he will definitely get more time, in a sense, at least you hope, as much as Valerian did. But he doesn't seem to be, like, because he's made some choices already. He's never going to be. He's not going to be the rigid manager that Valerian was, and I think that his rigidity to change to everything really in how Watford were playing, that was the downfall of Valerian. Maybe there's a little bit of a relationship problem that people talk about, but who knows? It would definitely feel like Tom would get a lot more time, but the fans would treat him the way you spoke about it, Colin. You know, he would have time and forgiveness. That's exactly how we feel about a homegrown player when they start playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the crowd are far more forgiving of Andrews than they are of, let's say, Lewis. You know, because of he's one of our own. And even though Tom, he definitely feels one of our own.
Yeah.
I haven't actually looked up yet. If you add up all the appearances he made for Watford and for other clubs, would he be in our Legends team?
He
didn't play that many, as many games for Manchester United.
He played quite a lot of games for Everton.
Yeah, I suppose
so. There a few seasons. But yeah,
it would be interesting. I think he would be in the craziness that is Watford managers and head coaches. He would be the most likely to be solid enough.
It's funny you say that, John. I mean, there's an overused phrase that could possibly also appear on a Football Clichés podcast, which is he knows the club. So they should get what was he called? Duncan, you know, the Scottish lad. They should get him back at Everton because he knows the club.
Yeah.
It's like, I never really believe, I think all clubs are pretty much the same except Watford. and I think that in this instance, it actually stands the investigation that Tom Cleverley does know the club and he knows those people and he knows the way they think and the way they act. And I think that because of that and because they know him, he can be an agent for change within the culture of the club. I mean, obviously Gino and Scott are quite tough characters and they're quite single-minded. But if you've got someone like Tom Cleverley, who's played for the club twice, who has coached and been captain and is now head coach, saying, I'm not sure that's the right way we should progress. I think we should take more time, or this player maybe, or do this or that, and let me get on with what I'm doing. And this is where I think we're going to end up. Then maybe they're more likely, as you say, to give him time and listen to him and go, yeah, all right, okay, I'll buy that. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah, the fascinating thing is who he's got in that team. Jimmy Gilligan, you know, we've already seen a couple of players be on the bench in the last two games, young players be on the bench. You know, it not that it's going to be, I mean, it might end up being, you know, 15 years ago when we started the podcast, how dependent we were on young players. He might be the man to have a knowledge of them, to have worked with them. He might be one to bring through, not the whole team, hopefully not the whole team, at least two or three of them who, you know, that sort of supportive thing. But him and Jimmy would be able to do that.
Yeah,
if that's the world that we live in as Watford fans, and the way that we're having to deal with, you know, recruiting players.
I also think from within. It's a lot to do with what the ambition, where the ambition is set for next season. So is it another, consolidation of the squad and the players and trying to get into that top 10, possibly top six? Or is it, as it was, I think, in the Edwards season, as soon as things aren't going well, you're gone. And then in the Championship season, as soon as it's not going well, right, you're off. We've got to get promoted this season, you know. And I don't think that's quite the ambition anymore. That's my sense, my sort of gut sense. But next season, it won't be like it's promotion or death. It's like, well, let's try and move forward. Let's try and be better this season. Let's try and be more consistent and see if we can get into that top six. It will be an easier division next year. There's no doubt about that. With Leeds and Southampton and Leicester, you know, it's been tough. They've taken an awful lot of points. Next season, I think the three teams that come down won't be as strong, and so it might be we might have a slightly better chance. But obviously, we need to bring some players in, and some players will have to go, and some players will be bought because it's time for them to move on, and it will help us financially. But obviously, like all football, there's a lot of turmoil in the summer period, so maybe. With Tom, you go, well, it's going to be lots of change, but not him, because that will be the anchor we attach ourselves to. I don't know. It's interesting to see what happens.
It is. And we've got six games left, six games or so to see what he does, what he can do if he makes us want to say, yeah, you're the man. Or if Gino does, really. Who cares about what we think? But we'll see. And we've got a game at home to Preston on the weekend. So thank you very much, Kieran.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Max Brigadier Colin.
Thank you very much, and happy Easter to everybody.
Merry Easter.
Christmas. Well, no,
Merry Easter.
Well, we're halfway through next season. Where are we?
I was actually in the conversation about how happy is very much an Easter word, and merry is very much a Christmas word. And why can't we mix those two up? So Merry Easter to you all.
You're such a rebel, John.
Thank you very much for listening. Do tell your friends. And we are From the Rooker End, and we hope that you join us again very soon for yet more From the Rooker End podcasts. Come on, you odds!